they chased their answers, travelers through time and space, stopping anywhere long enough to learn, but briefly enough to escape involvement. The light in the distance grows brighter, even as the surroundings grow ever more bizarre. Questions grow darker, answers more involved, until reality itself becomes an academic concept, fit only to be dissected over a pleasant cup of tea.
Welcome, brothers and sisters, and all androgynies in between, to Pagan Chaos Magic, Episode 5. Man, am I feeling so much better than the last time I podcasted. No, I'm not working yet, I'm still laid off, but after finally getting the last of the painkillers and antibiotics out of my system, my head is a lot cleaner and a lot clearer. It's unfortunate, you know, running into a couple of situations all while under medical care can really put you off your game. But I'm feeling a lot better about things and back much surprisingly happy. Just really surprisingly, strangely. Still stressed. Still looking at the balances in the accounts and looking at the bills and paying attention and keeping my eyes wide open for the opportunities that I need to come my way, but feeling pretty good. I slayed the, you know, demons that always pop up around the time, any time I'm unemployed. When I say demons, I don't actually, you know, I don't necessarily believe I've been assigned any personal demons by any particular infernal plane of existence. It's that what some might call negative thought forms, what a psychologist might call a neurosis. What it basically boils down to is I have some very strong triggers when I'm not working. I mentioned before that I'm kind of a workaholic, and I wasn't kidding. It's been a lot of wasted years of my youth working 7 days a week, trying to prove I wasn't the lazy bum I had been told I was on a continued basis. And, you know, that's personal cross I bear, so to speak. Everybody's got a few. Nobody comes to magic without a few. We don't come to magic. Sometimes it comes to us, but sometimes we go seeking it, because we gotta figure out how to deal with these crosses we're carrying around. And I'll talk a little bit later about the techniques that I use when, you know, real depression and despair is looming on the horizon. Because I've been there before. Anyone who's lived for any length of time has gone through at least a mild depression of some sort. Very few people are untouched by it. And some of us have been hit really hard in our past by a deeper depression, and that gives us the wisdom of seeing the signs as it approaches. I've discovered some really nicely effective techniques, I think, to deal with it. I'll discuss a little bit after the break, but right now I just want to play some music that reflects my frame of mind. It's hard to describe this weirdly blissful state I'm in right now. It has occurred to me that not only don't I have a job to go to when I wake up in the morning, they won't even let me go in. Since there are presently few opportunities available, though I am, you know, I do have some lines in the water, there's actually no place that I am supposed to or allowed to go to in the morning to perform my daily routine, which puts me in a wonderfully unique situation, which is I have the ability to, in many ways, create my own routine to do all of those things I've needed to do, all of those things I've wanted to do. I've got a nice chunk, right now I've got a nice chunk of time and effort already put into cleaning out my basement, which is a project overdue by about 12 years. And it feels amazingly good to clear out clutter right now. Really good headspace for that. As a matter of fact, my headspace right now is delightful in some very strange ways. So I'm going to play a piece of music for you. Actually, two pieces of music from Faith and the Muse, from their The Burning Season album. The name of the album is The Burning Season. It was released in 2005. The two pieces of music are back-to-back on the album, and you can tell they're meant to be played together because the end of the first track, Porphyrogene, I believe that's how you pronounced it, ends very abruptly, and if you listen to the very beginning of the next track, Through the Pale Door, you catch the end of what should be Porphyrogene. All right, when an artist does that, I pay attention. They're telling me they want these two pieces of music to be played together. And I've always loved Porphyrogene. That tune has called to me from the very first moment I heard it. I think it may be the song that I heard and stopped and went over to my then brand new girlfriend at the time and said, "Who is this?" was when I heard Porphyrogene. Through the Pale Door, lyrically, sounds like a really, in some ways, incredibly depressing tune. It's classic goth, and yet somehow it is putting this incredible smile on my face. So I'm just going to play these two tunes. Thank you to Faith and the Muse for letting me play their music on my podcast and give you a little piece of what my head feels like right now. It's not a terribly bad place to be. brothers and sisters. Time Warp 4 days. I'm back in the saddle, recording. I needed a few days to get my head together. I had really pulled something off with my meditation and my practice that I... Every once in a while, you really discover something new. You intuitively leap and grab a hold of a concept or a technique that comes to you almost spontaneously. And I did that. That's why I'm in such a better mood. And I wanted to explain it. And I realized that as I tried to explain it on the first night I was recording this new podcast, that I really needed to consider about how I wanted to approach this. Discussing one's own magical work, work that one has done or is doing personally, is a tricky thing. The moment you start introducing just the knowledge of the work that you're doing to other conscious beings, their energy can enter into the equation, can conflict with your program, can fuck up your spell, can turn it around backwards, upside down, or just make it disappear. So, as a good friend of mine, who I, on occasion, take a little spiritual counsel from, once told me, when I asked him the question, if he was in my position, what would he discuss? He once said to me, "Well, my friend, I make it a practice not to talk about anything that someone else might fuck up." So, taking his advice, I had to figure out a way of breaking down what had occurred and explaining it, because I think it's a valuable technique. I'm sure I'm not the only person who's done this, but this is what occurred to me. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a history here. We all, in our meditations, if we spend long enough looking, we'll run into our personal demons. Please, I'm not talking about demons in the monotheistic sense. I'm talking about the demons in our own mind, the neuroses, the conflicting programs in our own brain that make us frankly act stupid or not in our best interest, or frankly not in our environment's best interest. And these programs are how I'm going to approach explaining what was going on. When I mentioned that I had defeated the three demons, they were a construct that came to me during meditation years ago when I was unemployed. After the 9/11 attacks, not a lot of people understand that for a good 2 years, the auto industry projects just were immediately put on hold. A lot of businesses went out of business because they were called up by Ford, Chrysler, or GM and just said, "You know that new line you're working on is for X new model? Just hold. We don't know what's going on. We don't know if we're entering into a major war. We have no idea." Because there was a lot of panic around that time. We really didn't know what the hell was going on. All we knew is that some people who really, 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 really hated us had crashed some airplanes into some of our tallest, proudest skyscrapers. So, I went through a period of unemployment in 2002 that was a really rough patch. And when you're depressed and you are capable of magical function, it kind of makes sense to use what ability you have to dispel the funk. Now, when I was meditating on my situation, when I was unemployed, when I was feeling depressed, when I was trying to put together a manner to move forward, the appearance of the three demons, well, you want to call it astral space, you want to call it my meditation space, whatever you want to call it, appeared to me. And the three demons, they're a metaphor. They're a thought form to represent three things that had been repeated to me many times in my youth by my father. And the reason I'm going to tell you these three things is because I've spent years fighting these three demons, these three thought forms, these three negative bio programs in my computer. Demon 1. You're a lazy bum who will never amount to anything. Demon 2. You will never be able to support a family. Demon 3. You will never be able to hold a job. Now, these demons were delivered to me personally by my old man. You only come to understand that when you're older, that when a father is shouting at you that you're not going to be successful, there's one or two reasons to do it. One, he's more jealous of your success, or he's afraid you won't be successful and that you'll be a burden to him the rest of your life. My father was a little bit of both. Mostly, he was afraid I would not succeed. And if I would not succeed, then how was I going to be a successful man? I was his firstborn. Oh boy, mix a little old world pride in there, and you can see where that's a problem. So I had spent years trying to dispel these demons. In astral space, I had fought them with swords and spears and shields and constructs. One of my better weapons was a spiritual shotgun, I guess you could call it. I developed over time that was really pretty easily winning. I could face them in meditative space, and it was a lot easier simply to shoot them with that scattergun and dispel them than it was to hack them to pieces with a sword or a spear. But the trouble with those techniques were, no matter how many times I killed them, as long as I was unemployed, they would come back within a day, maybe two, maybe three, but they were always back shortly. And the wars in my mind, the wars in astral space, just to keep those three off my back, were exhausting me. So I would get the benefit of temporarily suppressing those demons by fighting with them, but I would never be able to repress them completely. And, well, hey, that's paralyzing in and of itself. I was able to move forward because I would have blocks of time where my mind would be clear, and I wouldn't spend all of my time freaking out. But it was an imperfect solution to the problem. And when I got laid off this time and I was depressed, I could see those three demons coming over the hill. I could see them from a long ways away. Oh, I recognize those guys. I've seen them once or twice before. Now, how I handled them this time was completely different, and it was almost some pat myself on the back and call it an inspired move. But when I did it, I didn't even think about what I was doing. I had been thinking about the nature of the energy that those three demons possessed. The nature of the energy was, I'm going to explain this. Now, I'm going to shift gears. We're talking about demons. Well, the demons represent programs. I'm going to call them, for the purposes of the rest of this discussion, let's use the psychological paradigm. They were neuroses. Now, what's a neuroses? A neuroses is when you are out of balance bioprograms or conflicting bioprograms. When there are two instructions in your brain and the parallel processing computer that's between your ears that are arguing with each other. I'll give you an example. In program A, which is loaded from your parents, well, from my parents, my father specifically, program A was, you're a lazy bum who will never amount to anything, you'll never be able to support a family, you'll never be able to hold a job. Well, and spending some time meditating on that and thinking about, how do I fix that? I know that's not true about myself. But when I'm unemployed, those things creep up on me and make me feel as if I'm a lazy bum who won't ever be able to support a family or hold a job. So somewhere in my 20s, I installed a patch. It was kind of unconscious. You know, we all work to deal with our problems. And we'll call that Program B, a personal programming and patch that I installed in my early 20s. That program was compensate for Program A by instituting the following protocols. One, work 6 to 7 days a week to disprove Program A, preferably 10 to 12 hours a day. 2. Maintain patch for years before instituting family upgrade to prove continuity of patch. And that's what I did. Well, now we run into the problem. The biocomputer has a problem. Program A limits me. I installed Program B as a patch, a band-aid, a bypass around Program A. And here I am, 39 years old, very much in love with my wife, very much in love with my frustrating little 17-month-old son. That's a great thing. But with the loss of employment, the structural integrity of the Program B patch begins to decay immediately. And as Program B, the work 7 days a week to disprove Program A patch, falls apart because I don't have a job, Program A, the lazy bum can't hold a job program, reasserts dominance in the overall parallel processing structure and throws my brain biocomputer into an escalating panic mode. And in the end, with the total loss of Program B, when my brain is finally truly understood that I am unemployed, the command structure of Program A, that I am incapable of success in supporting a family, is in full conflict with the moment-to-moment fact that I have a family to support. Now, if you think about that neurosis, it's cyclical and self-amplifying. Using the example I've been using, the neurosis reinforces itself every time Program A bumps into the fact I have a family to support. To give you an example of, you know, how that plays out in someone's head, my head in specific, it's something like, I will never be able to support a family, but I have a family. But I will never be able to support a family, but I have a family. But I will never be able to support a family, but I have a family. Repeat ad nauseum. Now, the conflict loops amplifies Program A every time there is that conflict with the fact that I have a family to support. There is a conflict. I am told I cannot support a family. I am a lazy bum incapable of doing such a thing. Parental programming. My patch has disintegrated because I don't have the employment to prove that Program A is false. So Program A starts to get louder as it's not being paid attention to because it's running into the opposite, which is, well, whether or not I've been told I can't support a family, I nonetheless have one on my hands moment to moment to support. Now, can you see how that's a cyclical energy that I'll never be able to sort of support a family, but I have a family? It's like constantly circling between two poles. It's what some people like to call a vicious cycle. And that conflict was represented by the three demons. It was just a structure that had appeared to me in meditation years before. So what am I going to do now? Am I going to fight these demons with swords or spiritual shotguns or psychic ray beams or giant dragon fleets? However my brain wanted to handle it, I could never kill them. They always came back. So, there is a certain point in your life when you get to a certain age where you realize that some of the damage that was incorporated into you during your early years will never be completely repaired. That doesn't mean you're doomed forever to wander the earth a broken being. It means you learn to patch and to reinforce the areas of your psyche which help and assist you around the damage that remains. And eventually, maybe, as you approach older age and wisdom, you can learn to rebuild on the spot that was damaged something stronger and better. So, I'm sitting there contemplating, thinking, you know, I don't really want to cast a prosperity spell. I've done it before. I had crafted it very carefully, and it put me in a position years ago that I didn't want to be in. And I'll explain that on another podcast. I have no problem with prosperity spells. I really don't. I think they're fantastic as long as you put the caveat into your spell that, you know, you're not harming another to get it. I have absolutely no ethical qualms about them. But a less than perfectly crafted prosperity spell once put me in a position that was very uncomfortable, and that I actually refused the possible outcome of the spell that would have been to my benefit, but would have greatly been to somebody else's. Well, it would have hurt them, and we'll leave it at that. So what do I do with these demons that won't leave me the hell alone? Because when they're in, when they're attacking, when those three laws that were laid down ad nauseum into my brain when I was a child, that I was lazy, unable to support a family, never going to be able to hold a job, when those guys show up, it makes, you know, it freezes you, it locks you up. That psychical energy just, it takes up so much processing time in your brain that you just kind of get locked. Paralysis. No ability to move forward. For the programmers and non-programmers alike, you know what happens on your computer, specifically Windows. It happens on Apple's too. However, Microsoft has a special talent for producing this effect. Run too many programs at once, and then try to get a lot of stuff done, and bounce between the different programs. And what you will find is that fast computer you have falls down on its knees and starts to crawl, because it's just too much to handle. And that's kind of what was happening in my brain, that cyclical, you can't support a family, but I have a family to support. You can't support a family, but I have a family to support, was taking up all of my brain time. There was no other thoughts to be had. Now, I could have spent a daily battle with these three concepts, fought with them constantly, exhausted myself, and dragged myself forward on my hands and my knees, but I just felt there had to be a better way. And I found myself seeing those demons walking up over that hill in astral space, headed my way, with smiles on their faces. And I reached for that deep well of despair that I'd been saving up, that feeling as if everything my father had ever said about me was true. And I hadn't used that yet. I had managed to isolate it and store it for an occasion I would need it. Because despair is every bit as powerful as belief. It is one of those things that you can fire energy work with a lot of gigawatts, man. Just blow it right the hell out. Just, there's nothing like despair. There's nothing like utter terror that you're going to fail completely to get your juices flowing. And I just drew that back into me, and I let it run full rein. I basically allowed it to amplify and grow into the vicious cycle, getting louder and louder. I paid attention to the conflict. I brought it to the forefront of my brain. I could feel it pulsing on my spine, and in my brains, into my guts, tightening them, just making me feel just raging with despair and power. And as I was pulsing with that, I just kind of reached out and swirled my hand. Not my actual hand, the hand I was carrying in astral space, if you want to call it that. And as I was swirling my hand in the space, you know, the white stuff just starts to form a little circle, and it swirls a little more, becomes a little vortex, just maybe like you'd get in a bathtub if you swirled your hand around and around a mini whirlpool. And then I just started feeding all of my despair right into that whirlpool. Because that despair, as I said, is cyclical energy. And nothing is better for a whirlpool. Nothing is better for a water spout, a vacuum suction, than a cyclical energy. It helps it run around and around and around. So once I could see this vortex in front of me, like a tornado. A tornado of despair just tearing up astral space right in front of me. I don't know why, I just reached over and pointed the end, the open end of the vortex, at the first demon, and he sucked right in. And then I just swept it across the other two, like a vacuum cleaner. And as those demons, as the sources of the conflicts, entered into that whirlpool, they only powered it further. And when I had all three sucked into that emotional vortex, there was a near instant sense of relief, like I can only describe as if you had a toothache that had been gnawing at you for weeks, and the pain disappeared instantly and stayed gone. I mean, I was nearly giddy with it. I just about giggled my ass off. I felt so good. Now, maybe that's something that can work for you. I don't know. I just wanted to describe the technique, and I really don't think that anybody's energy thought patterns on it are going to interfere, because the work's been done. The only thing that I have to do every couple of days is spend a little time meditating and finding that vortex. It's, if you've ever seen the plate spinners on some variety show where they'll take a stick and they'll get a ceramic plate spinning on top of it, and they get, you know, they're performers, multiple sticks, multiple plates spinning on top of these sticks, and they're constantly reaching their hands up to give the plate another whirl on top of the stick to keep it spinning. Well, I don't have to put that much energy into it. But if, as long as I keep a little part of my consciousness attached to that whirlpool, that vortex, and every once in a while just give it a little nudge forward, just whatever despair I had developed during that day, just feed it in. It loves it. Speeds it right the hell back up. And those three demons haven't been able to get out yet. If anything, they only power it further. So if I can't kill them, I can at least bottle them up. And I can tell you, I'm feeling a lot better after I pulled that off. I had to sit down and write that out. That emotional vortex technique, that's what I'm going to call it, is probably as close as I can call, I don't know. Maybe it's the beginnings of a book. I've got a whole lot of time on my hands. I'm trading some web work that I'm for some bartered things I need. And, you know, maybe I'll take some of the spare time and start putting together a workbook. We'll call this the one, the Emotional Vortex Technique. Maybe this will be the boost to get me off my ass and writing again. But I just really wanted to share that with you. I mean, the concept is to start with a surplus of emotion approaching neurosis. Something that's really got you in an emotional loop. Put yourself out in trance space and let it go. Let it have free reign. Freak yourself out with the depths of your despair. Look at all the worst case scenarios and work yourself up into a righteous state of mind, and then attempt to produce the vortex. And once that vortex is going, whether or not you have demons to suck into it or just bad emotions, I really am liking the fact that when I start to get a little freaked out during the day, I mean, this is not a perfect technique. I'm not to say I'm walking around with a smile on my face all day long, butterflies settling on my shoulders and birds singing. But man, it's like the migraine went away. So give that conflict free rein, start that vortex, and just pour it in. See if that works for you. The imagery may not. I have some interesting ways of seeing things on the astral plane. Some people are very good at visual, and I am very good at visual projection or imagination, if you want to call it that. But I'm not too bad with some of my other senses, and as time progresses, it all comes together relatively well. And I just wanted to share that technique with you. I mean, I know there's a lot of us out there who are staring at the bills and staring at the lack of funds coming in to cover the bills. And that can really put you in brain lock. Whether or not you had that parental programming doesn't matter. You know, you can still be just emotionally distraught over what's going on. Maybe give that a try. I recommend it. So I'm going to play a little music. Been a while since I played Tree of Shadows, so I'm going to play a song that has a lot of resonance with me called I Stand.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2. Just a cruel joke from fate, or a vision not yet understood. I stand in the wind. Can you see? Does the wind scatter all sense it brings? I stand in the wind. Can you see me? See me?
Okay, I wanted to talk a little bit about four of the basic paradigms that I use for magic. When I say paradigm refers to the basic understanding of how things work. When you have a paradigm shift, the rules of the game completely change. For instance, nuclear weapons were a paradigm shift in war. Everything changed. You didn't suddenly have to rely on great degrees of manpower, when frankly all it took was a few nuclear weapons to destroy the world. That's a paradigm shift. Paradigms define how we go about learn and explain things. I'm not going to go into great depth here, but I am going to give you a really brief overview of the four that I'm going to be using most often. I'm going to pull them from Patrick Dunn's book, Postmodern Magic. I've mentioned it before. On page 26, he starts with what his definition of the four paradigms are. The first is the spirit paradigm, where anything magical is attributed to interaction with spirit forces, whether they be angelic or demonic or otherwise. The second paradigm is the energy paradigm. It's very easy to equate the energy paradigm with modern life because we have energy all around us. We have electrical energy coming out of outlets. We have light energy coming out of our bulbs. We understand the concept of energy and how it's used, so it's very easy to relate to what we see around us. It also relates to things like chi or other occult martial art projections of force. The third is the psychological paradigm, which attempts to explain away the presence of magic by the fact that it's somehow or another a projection of your mind. And in the last is the information paradigm, which is kind of new and kind of very interesting. It fits into my personal worldview. It views the world as a sort of computer program, a collection of information that mages reprogram with their minds. I have a kind of a hybrid of both the energy and the information paradigm. One doesn't work without the other, just like chaos doesn't work without order. One by itself is dead. It takes them both together to make something happen. But we're going to talk about that more in later shows. I'm going to call it a night. I'm going to play some good music, and I want to make a few comments. For all of you who are concerned, no, you're right. Even in the last 4-day time warp, Kaya Dragon here is not working. And while I have had a few inquiries from other states, not looking too promising, but at the moment I can keep the hatchets battened down and we're getting by just fine. So don't worry about me. I will muscle on through. I'm really kind of going off topic and kind of not really enjoying a new series on TV called Kings. I'm just old enough to appreciate the king as a favorite character while I hate the guy at the same time. I love the guy at the same time. And I'm young enough to appreciate the young character who is just naive and, well, good-hearted enough to try to make a difference. Silas the king, and I believe it's David the young army officer. But in the latest episode, there was a confrontation between Silas the king and someone who was trying and had a very powerful lever in bringing his empire to its knees within days. And when he told him, "Go ahead and kill me, your empire falls with me on this day," Silas said something that, "Oh, it's my attitude right now." He says, "Oh no, things will change. I will stand, and you will watch me do it. I don't die in a corner. I plow through or break a wall. How do you think I got to be king?" Well, I'm not looking to be king. But if you replace that with, "How do you think I got to be me?" That's how I'm feeling right now. I will make it. I will find a way, and that's all there is to it. Well, I got a couple ideas for a few side special shows I like to do. I'm considering doing some pathworking stuff, some stuff that you could listen to while not driving or in a position where you can relax and meditate. And I'm also, I've got a lot more work just to do on the podcast, pulling together the quantum physics episode. I am pulling the data together, but getting the names of the sources and the names of the correct scientists is what I'm running into right now. It's like, okay, I've got to pull the information together, but I've also got to get my references together so I don't just sound like another crank talking about how quantum physics is really all about X belief or Y mysticism. So, working on that right now. And I wish you all the best. I know there are plenty of brothers, sisters, and everybody in between having a harder time than Kaya Dragon out here. And things will get better. And I really want to say thanks for all the kind comments and emails. I am weeks and weeks behind responding to emails, but my head's been in the dirt, folks. I will get back with you. And I really want to say thank you to everybody who voted for me over at Podcast Alley and who left a comment. I believe you can vote like every other day or so if you feel like it. They restart the vote count every month, but it does give a total, and I think it's weighted heavily for the newcomers because it's got me in a much higher ranking than I expected, but it's really helped the show get a lot of exposure, and I appreciate that. So if you get the chance and you like the show and you want to vote, please go to podcastalley.com, or you can just go to paganchaosmagic.com. There's a link on the right-hand page. I want to mention at least one podcast. I'm not sure whether or not I mentioned him in the last podcast. Tommy Elf over at Edge of the Circle. Guy's been going for 4 years, I believe. 3-4 years he's been doing this podcast. Really, really smart guy. And whether or not he calls himself a chaos mage, I don't know. I haven't heard all of his episodes yet. He's exactly got that kind of attitude. He reminds me very much. He revels in the differences, and I do like that about him. Please do keep it up, Tommy. I enjoy listening to your stuff. Very, very good. Thanks to Jeff Maxwell and Ray Gazzora for the introduction, both the spoken word and the music. And thank you to any artist that I've forgotten to mention for allowing me to play your music on my podcast. Thanks again for the email, kiadragon@gmail.com. That's kiadragon@gmail.com. Love to hear anything you care to throw my way. And for those of you who have written, thank you very much. I will write back with you soon. I'm working really hard on putting together a shopping cart online for a friend using open source software, which I have never used before. I mean, I've used open source software, but I've never worked on an open source shopping cart. And it's, well, it's interesting the first time. So I'll be doing some work on that and doing some work on the podcast. I hope that you'll hang out and hear me talking next time. So here's a few really good commercials for a really good podcast or three. And Omnia with Witch's Brew.
Hello, my name is Dave the Bard, and I'm the host of Druidcast, the podcast of the Order of Bards, Ovates and Druids. Each month we present a wonderful selection of music, poetry and story, plus an interview or presentation by one of the leading teachers within the Western mystery traditions. In the past we've had Philip Cargon.
Mir Bashir, an Indian palmist, publishes a story called The Book of Shadows, which apparently Gardner got his idea for, rather than calling the book The Grimoire, he calls it The Book of Shadows and so on.
Professor Ronald Hutton.
Too often, the horned god of nature can be turned into a simple force of hoof and horn and grain and grunt and thrust and lurch and armpits and the men's locker room, rather than of the intellect, the tongue with words, the speeder of thought, the creator of beautiful, delicate things.
Ellen Everett Hopman.
Hello, Helen. Hello, and I'm sitting here in my oak forest in western Massachusetts.
Your oak forest.
I live in an oak forest, I do.
Oh, you really do?
I really do.
Oh, okay.
Timothy Freak.
And the Gnostics, I think, are particularly clear with it. All right? They speak to me very clearly, which is, here we are in this perpetual, ever-changing moment where the appearances are constantly changing, but something is present the same, consciousness itself. We have fallen into the mirror of life and identified with the appearance rather than what is witnessing.
Fionn Tulach.
One of the best pieces of advice I was ever given by a traditional storyteller was, don't tell a story unless you believe in it with every fibre of your being.
Christopher Hughes.
But I've often sort of heard as well that, you know, and especially of late, that Druidry is a celebratory tradition. And that's it. End of, full stop. But I quite disagree wholeheartedly that it's not just a celebratory tradition. Not only is it a way of life, it's a tradition that not only empowers and transforms, but is steeped in magic, steeped in a quality that supersedes any human concept.
So if you're a modern druid, Wiccan, witch, Celtic Christian, pagan, or just interested in nature spiritualities, tune in to Druidcast each month. You can find us on iTunes or on our website at www.druidry.org.
Shadow Dance Podcast, promo take one.
A vampire and a druid walk into a bar.
And the Wiccan duck.
Oh, God. We're such geeks. Shadow Dance Podcast, promo take two.
All hail Caffeina in the name of the cup, the saucer, and the holy roast.
Oh, God. Yeah, we're recovered Catholics.
Shadow Dance Podcast, promo take three.
Children of the night, what music they make.
Is something caught in your throat? What's wrong with you?
Popcorn. Shadow Dance Podcast, promo take four?
I got nothing.
I'm not good at this whole promotional thing.
Neither am I.
Read, I write, I study way too much. Just kind of like all of you people listening out there.
Absolutely. So if you want to sit down and listen to some folks talk and then come up on the forums and talk back at us, we're going to be exploring
magic, Gen X, witchcraft, vampirism. We're just going to see if you can turn magic on its head and if it works right that way or how it works any which way.
And we're open to suggestions, so stop up to www.shadowdancepodcast.com and leave us some feedback. Listen to the show.
Right on, then.
All right. Carry on. He's bound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done?
I'm Fox.
Hi, I'm Erwin.
And we're Pagan Parents on the Edge. Has your life been a little crazy lately?
Are you standing in line at the bank or the grocery store or DMV? Is your life really hectic lately?
Are the kids too loud? TV too loud? The world getting too loud?
Plug in your earbuds.
And make yourself your favorite beverage.
Join us for conversations about life, as seen from the experiences of two pagan parents.
You can catch us on iTunes, you can catch us at Podbean, you can catch us at Podcast Pickle, and you can catch us on MySpace, where we have a player that you can get the Pagan Parents on the Edge episodes.
We'd love to have you as a listener.
And now, back to your regularly scheduled program.
Macbeth, Act 4, Scene 1. A cave. Three witches are gathered around a fire. Thrice the brinded cat hath mewed.
Thrice and once the hedgepig whined.
Harpy cries, "'Tis time, 'tis time." Round about the cauldron go.
Give your poison, let this throw.
Skin of toad and spike of bone.
Serpentine and eagle stone.
Serpent, dragon, dancing dead effigy of beaten lead.
Double, double, trouble, you bubble in a witch's brew.
sight of a fenny snake.
People call them
boil a bite. I flute and toe a frog.
Bull of bat and dog of dog.
Lizard leg and fairy wing round the bat. The cauldron sing double, double trouble. You bubble in a witch's brew. Birdies done double, double trouble. You bubble in a witch's brew.
Will be done when the hurly-burly's done. Double, double, double trouble. You bubble in a witch's.